It's to the best of our knowledge from PRX. I'm Anne Strainchamps. What is it like to stand in the path of a total eclipse?
So here I am on this tropical beach, and then all of a sudden, weird things started to happen.
David Barron, he's the author of American Eclipse.
I noticed that daylight looks off and a cool wind kicks up. Colors were strange. Shadows had become incredibly sharp, like someone had turned up the contrast knob on TV. And then all of a sudden, the lights went out. And I looked up in the sky, and I felt like I had suddenly been transported to another planet. There was this object I had never seen before. It looked like a wreath woven from tinsel. It just shimmered out there in space. And the planets, because I could see Mercury and Venus and Jupiter all lined up around the sun. And it made me feel both like an insignificant speck, but it also made me feel incredibly empowered, like I, as an individual, am nothing, but I'm part of something enormous and grand. It placed me in the universe in a permanent way.
Wow, that's the most unbelievable thing I've heard.
And if you talk to other eclipse chasers, they will tell you similar stories. I know I sound like an outlier and a crazy person, but that's what a total solar eclipse is like.
You think about it every day? Really?
So the way I describe it, I am not a religious person. But what I witnessed with that total eclipse gives me, I think, the kind of comfort that religion provides people. You realize that you're in the face of something so much larger than yourself, so much more powerful than yourself, that you just surrender. And that's the language I hear from people who are born again.
Yeah.
This sense of, I don't describe it in that religious sense in terms of what I believe happened to me, but I believe it tapped into that exact same part of the brain.
You said, and I've heard other people say, that there is something addictive about this experience, being in the path of totality and seeing a total eclipse. What's addictive about it? I mean, do you really feel like, I just have to do this again and again?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's so brief and it's so spectacular. I mean, most total eclipses last less than 3 minutes. So you are suddenly transported to what seems to be this other universe, and then all of a sudden it's over and you're back where you started, and you want to experience it again.
You're an eclipse junkie.
I am, absolutely.
So you wrote and tell the story in your book of one of the last eclipses, total eclipses, to where the path of totality crossed America, and this was 1878, 140 years ago. And this particular eclipse was a galvanizing experience for scientists in particular. How come and what happened?
So 1878, we were a young country. Obviously, we had just turned 100 years old 2 years before that. We were becoming a real industrial power. I mean, Europe had to take us seriously. But frankly, Europe looked down their noses at us when it came to literature and art and music and science. In fact, one of the reasons the Europeans didn't think we would compete in science was that we were this egalitarian democracy. And there was a belief that a country run by the average person just would never really care about something so intellectual as basic science. But there was a small group of American scientists who were determined to turn our country into a global scientific power. And the eclipse of 1878 helped to bring that about. Expeditions were sent out to Wyoming and Colorado and Texas to study the solar eclipse. you had newspaper articles really cheering on the home team of American astronomers and wanting them to succeed and to show Europe what we could do.
It's like the Eclipse Olympics. So who was competing for Team America?
Well, there were dozens of astronomers who came out to Colorado and Wyoming. One was Thomas Edison, who in 1878 was just 31 years old, but had just become a global celebrity because of his recent invention of the phonograph. And that summer, he decided to come out to Wyoming with a group of scientists to actually do some astronomy. And he invented a device called the tizimeter, which was an extremely sensitive heat detector, basically an infrared detector, that he was going to use to study that strange aura that was seen around the sun during a total eclipse, which today we know is the sun's outer atmosphere, the solar corona, but back then was a great mystery. And Edison, who was being called the Wizard of Menlo Park, he had his laboratory in Menlo Park, New Jersey. It was believed that Edison, if he was going to be out at the eclipse, he was going to do something marvelous.
Well, when I think of Edison today, I think of the light bulb. Is there any chance that the light bulb was sort of inspired by his seeing an eclipse?
Well, funny you should say that, because in fact, the very day after he returned from his eclipse expedition to Wyoming, he started work on the light bulb. I mean, so the eclipse expedition came right between his two most important inventions, the phonograph and the light bulb. And there is a story told in Wyoming that Edison was inspired to invent the light bulb when he was in the West for the eclipse. It was when he went fishing after the eclipse and had a bamboo fishing pole that he broke and threw in the campfire. And when he saw the fibers of bamboo glowing in the campfire, that gave him the idea to use bamboo fiber in his incandescent lamp, which in fact he did use bamboo. But that story is not true.
Oh, darn.
Sorry.
So besides Edison, who else was there?
One that I focus on went west for very different reasons, and that was Mariah Mitchell. She was professor of astronomy at Vassar College, which, of course, was a new all-women's college in the 1870s. And she went west to try to convince the American public that women could be scientists at a time when there were very few female scientists, and it was very hard for women to get educated in science and then go on and get a job. So she, in 1878, put together an all-female expedition from Vassar, and her eclipse expedition got a lot of attention in the press. People were fascinated by these female scientists who, on their own, headed out to the Wild West to study the eclipse.
There have been other times when the goals of American science and democracy kind of aligned in a similar exhilarating kind of way. I mean, I grew up, you maybe did too, watching moon launches on TV and, you know, feeling like the whole rest of the country, we were all tuned in at the same time. Today, there's something about that that seems almost innocent and idealistic. It just seems like we're in a very different place now in terms of how we think about science.
I think that the eclipse this year could have a similar effect to the one in 1878, and in some ways the moon landing. I don't want to push this too far, but in terms of a shared experience that goes beyond partisan politics, that is about science, is just about the wonder of the universe, I think we will have that experience. And in fact, I've been on a book tour for much of the last 2 months, and at a talk I gave in Philadelphia, a young man in his 20s came up to me. He was wearing a T-shirt from the European Particle Accelerator, CERN. And he said he had to tell me that he, as a boy growing up in Venezuela, saw that same total eclipse that I saw in 1998. The path of totality went over Venezuela before it got to Aruba. And he said witnessing that total solar eclipse as a boy inspired him to become a physicist. And I tell you, we're going to see the same thing again this year. There will be children all across the United States whose lives will be changed, and some of them will go decide that they want to study science because of what will happen to them in less than 3 minutes.
David Barron. He's an eclipse chaser, a science journalist, and the author of American Eclipse.